One of the things that I miss about living overseas was traveling by train. I miss it. I hate driving. I hate driving across town. I hate driving across country. And so if I can pay some guy to drive a train for me with me in it, I'm a big fan. I love it. And we actually traveled by train quite a lot. It was pretty convenient for us, fairly cheap. I am a nervous traveler. It doesn't matter where I'm going. So I always get there so early, it drives my family crazy because they wonder what on earth are we doing there. The kids were little. They're going bonkers because they just want to start going. But I have many memories of all of us sitting on a bench somewhere at a train station waiting for the train to show up. And my son, I didn't want to say who it was. We'll get to that. I have one child who I'm not going to name right now who always saw the big yellow line that was stretched all across where the train shows up, right? You guys know what the big yellow line is. Sometimes it was painted onto this, you know, the floor. Sometimes they, you know, built tiles into the floor. But the yellow line meant, you know, don't cross, dummy, there's a train coming, right? Well, one of my children, who I'm not supposed to say their name, right? He likes to push boundaries. How many of you guys have had a child that liked to push boundaries, right? Raise your hands. I think every family has one. How many of you guys were the child that pushed boundaries? Thank you. I see that hand, Randy Cook. What always cracks me up is my son that likes to push boundaries, Trey Rodert. He would see that yellow line, and it was absolutely irresistible to him, right? He saw the yellow line, and I am convinced it wasn't even a conscious decision on his part. Not always. Sometimes it was very much a conscious decision, but gradually, the longer we waited, the more his little toe did this. You know what I mean? He saw the yellow line, and he just kind of flirted with it for a little bit, right? Trey's toe and the yellow line are getting to know each other a bit. And then if we didn't notice, if we were reading a book or getting a snack or whatever, well, pretty soon, you know, he does this number where he just kind of puts his foot over and then he glances over at mom and dad to see if they saw that, right? Just doing this. I'm not crossing the line. I'm just stepping there, right? Anybody, does this sound familiar to anybody in your family? Yeah? So Trey would do this all the time, right? Pretty soon, if mom and dad didn't notice what was going on, Trey is dancing over the line. The conductors are coming out and telling him a train is coming, and we're the embarrassed parents that have the kid that doesn't know what to do when there's a big yellow line painted on the floor, right? That was our son, Trey. I think that when we have kids at home, it's our job, it's the parents' job, to kind of set the boundaries, set the rules, set the order of how things work. It's our job to teach our kids how to follow. Isn't that what we're doing? We're teaching them to follow us who are in authority. We're teaching them to obey the yellow line painted on the ground. We do that because we want to keep them safe, right? We want to teach them how the world works, that the things that we're asking you to do, asking our kids to do, are good for them, right? We want them to stay safe. We want them to grow up normal and adjusted. And things get really messed up when it gets backwards, when the parents start following the children. We know families like that, don't we? There's an order to these things. Parents lead, kids follow. Bosses lead, employees follow. You know how this works. Last weekend, Gary Johnson, wasn't that a blessing? That was great. He spoke to us and he mentioned that the suffix, those letters at the end of the word Christian, that I-A-N, mean follower of. So as Christians, we are followers of Christ, right? We use that word, we use that phrase a lot. We ask people who aren't Christians yet, hey, would you like to become what? A follower of Jesus. We say that all the time. It comes right out of the Bible. Jesus himself talked about that. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Sometimes I wonder, is it confusing? I know that we have heard it a million times, and so for those of us who say things like, I'm a follower of Jesus, it makes total sense. But to someone who's outside, maybe it doesn't make enough sense. Well, Jesus is not around physically anymore, so obviously we're not talking about that kind of follower. And when you read about followers in the New Testament, well, the disciples were real people following a real guy around. And obviously, we can't do that, right? We don't get to follow Jesus around and listen to his teaching. So we are spiritual followers of Jesus. So I think it's good for us to just take a minute and make sure, are we all on the same page when it comes to what does it mean when we all say we want to be followers of Jesus, or when we ask someone if they would like to be a follower of Jesus? So we're going to unpack that. Everybody ready for a little journey this morning? There's a turning point in the life of Jesus that I think is really pretty interesting. At the beginning of his ministry, Jesus did things quietly. He preferred to not make a big scene. He healed people, for sure, but a lot of times he told the people that he healed, hey, don't tell anybody, right? Let's just keep this between you and me. Most of the time, they didn't obey that. I think it would be tough to not talk about, you know, a miraculous healing that took place. But Jesus said, don't tell anyone, okay? As his popularity grew, that became impossible. And there's a point in his life where Jesus just shows all of his cards, right? He tells the disciples from then on what is going to happen to him. And it's an abrupt, like, gear shift that I imagine the disciples that heard him talk like this were thinking, what on earth? Like, how did we end up here? If you could do me a favor and open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16, we're going to be here and in one other passage today, so keep your finger here because we'll get back to this passage quite a bit. Matthew chapter 16, we're going to start in verse 21. It says this, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Could he get more transparent than that? He laid it all out, didn't he? Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said, this shall never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. You caught the very beginning, that first line, right? He said, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders. That is a huge shift. Jesus is looking into the future, and he's telling his disciples, his followers, that he's not going to be around much longer. That's big news. And I would guess, unimaginable to the disciples. Think about what they thought Jesus came to do. He was there to set up a kingdom, right? He's there to invade, kick out the occupiers, the Romans, so that they can have a godly Jewish nation once again. And so when he starts talking about things like, I have to go to Jerusalem and I'm going to suffer and I'm going to die, I bet they all thought, what? It kind of makes Peter's reaction not quite so surprising, right? Peter is kind of brash. He says all kinds of things. He's a little like me. His mouth gets him in trouble sometimes. Peter's the guy that cuts off a guy's ear when to defend Jesus when he's about to get arrested. Peter's always in the argument about who gets to be first in God's kingdom. This is Peter, right? So Peter says, no way, we're never going to let this happen to you. And Jesus has harsh words for Peter, doesn't he? Get behind me, Satan. That probably stung a little bit. He tells Peter, like, listen, I'm going to paraphrase. I get what you're saying, but that is not at all what I came here to do. And Peter, your whole attitude, it's got to go. It's got to get behind me, right? Because what I came here to do is much, much bigger than what you think I came here to do. So Jesus gives us a passage. It's one little sentence that shows us the price of being one of his followers. Very last verse, number 24. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to guess that not many of us in this room are very good at denying themselves. We don't like that very much, do we? Few of us have the willpower to take a look at a piece of dessert and say, no, thank you. right? Clearly, I am not good at denying myself, right? I have a friend of mine. He introduced me to his neighbor this week, and it was pretty cool that the neighbor has in his garage a Jeep Wrangler like my Jeep Wrangler from 1951. So even older than mine. He's rebuilding it, you know, from basically scratch. He kept the engine, but everything else he was rebuilding and touching up. And what struck me the most about this 1951 Jeep is I probably wouldn't fit in it. It's a tiny little thing, right? Like, the seats are tiny. There's only two of them. My Jeep has a tiny little back seat, but there's no room for a back seat in this Jeep. And I think that over the years since 1951, perhaps Americans have gotten larger than we used to be, because there's no way. Like, that is not at all a comfortable, normal-sized vehicle for people anymore. Clearly, Americans are really bad at denying themselves, right? I thought a lot about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. I have to deny myself. The original language, so the Bible was written in, not in English, right? And so when the translators translate, they have to, you know, turn Greek and Aramaic and Hebrew expressions into English so that we can get it. And this word where Jesus says deny himself, it can also be translated like he must reject himself. Kind of like a king, you know, like a king is sitting up on a throne and someone comes in and he says, I reject you, like, get away from me. I don't want you around. That's what this phrase means. It wants you to get, the king wants to be left alone. You understand what I'm saying? Myself, me, Brian, loves to creep in and take over the throne. How about you guys? I love to be the boss of me. How should I spend my free time? Should I spend my free time serving my family or binging a show on Netflix? How should I spend my money? Should I spend my money helping out a single mom that I know could use it? Or should I buy some new gadget that's real shiny and pretty and I think I deserve? How should I act at work? Should I be employee of the month? Or should I just do the bare minimum of what it takes to get by? How should I act at school? Should I be a light to the other students? Or should I have a bad attitude from the very first bell that rings? What do we do? These are the kinds of choices that we have to make as followers of Jesus day after day after day after day after day until you die, right? That's what we have to do. Hard choices that involve real sacrifice for the good of other people. It means choosing over and over again, I will not let me, Brian Rodert, usurp the throne and throw Jesus off of it. It means I let him be on there. I'm going to brag on my mama for just a minute. You guys mind if I do that? If she's watching online, she's going to be so embarrassed, but she's all the way in Texas and can't do a thing about it, can she? My mom moved to Texas a few years back, and she moved there so she could take care of her sister, my aunt, who was suffering for dementia. My aunt is married, but it was becoming too much for her husband to take care of by himself. So my mom upended everything and moved to Texas so she could become my mom's caregiver. Make sure that, or my aunt's caregiver, excuse me, make sure that she stays safe. And you know what I think, as I've talked to her over the years, I've asked her, like, what is hard about this? What's difficult? And I think it's the fact that the sacrifice never ends, does it? It doesn't. There's no hope that my aunt will get better. So for my mom and for my uncle, it is just day after day after day of making sure she stays safe, of taking care of her with no reward in return. My mom is faced with a decision, and it's probably a minute-by-minute decision of whether she's going to serve herself or serve her sister, right? She can deny herself or she can indulge herself. She can put on music that my aunt likes to listen, or she could put on a Hallmark Christmas movie, which is what she'd rather watch 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, right? Those of you who know have been in a similar situation of caregiving like that, for someone who isn't getting better, know that it's hard. There's no break. It's exhausting. It's demoralizing. My mom and my uncle did their best to keep Peggy at home as long as possible, but it soon became impossible to keep her safe all the time. She had some health issues come up, and they made the impossible decision to put her into a facility for dementia patients. Incredibly tough. Nobody wants to make that decision. My mom called me this week, and when we were catching up, she said that my aunt really doesn't eat anymore when she is alone at the facility, which they told her is to be expected. Her brain has stopped telling her that she's hungry. Just not interested in eating anymore. But when they show up, when my uncle or my mom show up, then she eats. It's like it perks something up in her body. And so they go at mealtimes every single day to make sure that my aunt remembers to eat. And I thought, man, you know, now it's almost harder than it was, because before she was at home, right? You know, they reminded her to eat and she was in the same room as them. Now they have to drive to the next town over to remind her to eat 3 times a day. And it's just a completely sacrificial thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, my aunt doesn't communicate. She doesn't say thanks for coming. She doesn't say I'm glad you stopped by. She really doesn't say much at all. It's just completely selfless thing that my mom and my uncle do. My mom doesn't get to play Words with Friends on her phone anymore with her sister. You guys know the Scrabble game that people play. My mom and her sister were so good at that, and they don't get to do that anymore. My mom just denies herself still, years later. And I think when I read this passage of Jesus saying that we have to deny ourselves, I'm probably going to think about my mom taking care of her sister for a really long time. Because it was just day after day after day after day of choosing to love her sister more than she loves herself. That's a really hard thing to do. My mom made sure that herself stays off the throne of her life. It means that she is rejecting the idea to treat herself so that she can take care of her sister. Okay, I'm done bragging on my mom. But she's doing a really good thing. I'm really proud of her. Jesus is describing what it means to be his follower. Remember, that's what we're talking about today, what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And I think we paint it in these huge brushstrokes, like, my mom moved to Texas to take care of her sister. Like, that's what it means to deny yourself. And yeah, that's obviously a big part of it. But I think that it's not always going to be these big, huge decisions that we have to grit our teeth and stick to. I think it's like little decisions that we take day after day after day that kind of add up to show that we are denying ourselves. I made a list of one day in the life of Brian Rodert of ways, of opportunities that I had to deny myself or serve other, or indulge myself. That was my choice. I made a list. I actually did this week so I could keep track of how many times. Should I stop at the ATM and get cash out so Heidi doesn't have to do it later? Yes or no? Should I pray with Franny before bed or go read this book that I'm almost done with and I'm just dying to finish? Okay. Should I do the dishes before I go to bed so that we all don't have to mess with them the next morning? Should I take the phone call or the text message of the person that I know has a need, but I just really don't have time to answer right now? Should I let Heidi pick what to watch on TV? Oh, we don't. The circles of what we like to watch on TV do not interlap at all, right? Heidi's over here. Brian's over here. Should I let Heidi win that night and let her watch what TV? Here's a good one. Should I give a safe amount when it comes time for offering, or should I give until it stings a little? You see what I mean about these decisions that we all have to deny ourselves? On the surface, like if I just look at any one of these things, it's like, well, that's not a huge decision. But you add it up over the course of a day, of a week, of a month, of a lifetime, And it shows whether or not we are actually denying ourselves. It's all these tiny little things that add up. There's a passage in the book of Philippians. I know I quote this passage a lot. I should actually go back and see how many of my sermons quote Philippians 2, but every time I read it, I feel like I get just a little bit more out. So you guys have to go along with me. Philippians chapter 2, the author Paul gets kind of poetic for a minute, and he starts talking about Jesus and what it meant for him to become human, to come to earth. Philippians chapter 2, verse 5, I'll just read it for you. It'll be on the screen. It says this: "In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus." Hold that in mind. That's the big thought, right? In your relationships with everybody in this room, everybody in your family, everybody outside your family, have this mindset. Jesus Christ, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Verse 6 is a weird verse. Every single Bible you'll ever read translates that verse just a little bit differently, okay? Some versions of that verse of the Bible say that Jesus didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped. That's kind of an interesting way of saying that same thing. To be used to his own advantage, or something to be grasped, something to hold on to. In fact, that's what some other versions say. Jesus didn't consider equality with God something to hold on to. There's this picture of Jesus who's 100% God, right? Equal with God in every way, and he releases it all. He makes himself nothing. God says, "Hey, Jesus, we have a job to do, and that job is to save all of mankind." Jesus says, "Okay." And in the next breath, all of what Jesus was becomes an embryo inside of Mary. I don't have a clue how that works. That's what happened. Jesus left all of that to become a baby like us. That is our example of how we are supposed to deny ourselves. That very same thing that Jesus did, we're supposed to do. And I'm not sure I'll ever really understand all that. Paul used the word servant. Did you guys see that? Jesus took on the very nature of a servant, which is another word that's hard for me to understand. How many of us have servants? None of us, right? There was exactly one time in my life where I was at a house with servants, and it was the weirdest experience of my life, right? I was a college kid. These people asked us to their home for dinner. It was a really nice house, right? And as a college kid, I'm like, I can't wait to see what's for dinner, right? Starving college student. We all sit down for dinner, we're visiting, and I'm kind of thinking like, there's no food on the table and nobody seems to be working in the kitchen. And then it was like a bell rang and these servants came out of these hallways and suddenly dinner was before me. And I remember the owner of the house could tell that we were really uncomfortable, like, we've never had this happen to us before, right? Servants coming and serving us our meal. And it amazes me because as soon as they served everything, poof, they disappeared. It was like they just arrived and we never saw them again, right? That's what servants do. They just take care of the job and then they leave. They go away. Super weird experience. I don't know if I could ever get used to it. But if I apply what Paul says about what Jesus becoming a servant, Jesus deferred to his master, right? He did his job and then he preferred to let his master take the center stage. Right? That was God. You guys ever seen that cartoon where the two cartoons are trying to get into the front door, into the door, and they're like, "After you, no, after you, no, after you." You ever seen that? And then they bump into each other. I tried to find the clip, but I couldn't find it. It would be much funnier if we could watch it instead of listening to me describe it. But anyway, that's kind of what this is like, right? It's like our interactions with each other should be constantly in a contest for letting the other person get their way, for letting the other person be more important than us. I thought a lot about this. I even bounced it off a couple friends. I have a theory. I could be totally wrong, so just delete this part of the sermon if I am. But I have a theory, okay? So all of us, unless we're Native Americans, we came here because someone at some point got on a boat and traveled over to a foreign country to start a brand new life, right? I have done that. I have gone to a foreign country to live. It's really, really hard. And I had electricity and the internet and all the things that make it super easy, right? People that did that in our ancestors did that with no promise of even living, of even surviving the attempt, right? You have to be an incredibly independent, steadfast, strong person to make that work. And I kind of wonder if it is just in us, if it has literally been bred into us, that independent spirit that I'm going to do this no matter what. I am the master of my own domain. And that has just kept reproducing itself until you get to Brian Rodert in 2021. And so sometimes I think that as Americans, this sin of being fiercely independent at the expense of other people is kind of our nation's sin, right? We look at the Israelites. If you read the Old Testament, one of their national sins was idolatry. We see it, right? I mean, it's plain as day. A prophet walks out the door, and 5 minutes later, they're building a golden calf and worshiping it, right? It happens multiple times over the course of Israel's history. They literally built physical idols that they worshiped, okay? Now, don't get me wrong. We have our own idols, but we're just not building statues to them, right? So the national sin of the Israelites was idolatry. And sometimes I wonder if our national sin, or maybe even I could say our church sin, is being fiercely independent at the cost of other people. That's my theory. I don't have any, like, studies. I'm not a super smart person. But I kind of wonder if that might just be why this is such a tough issue for us. There's exceptions. My word. Some of the humblest people I know are in this room right now. So don't think I'm pointing the finger at anybody. But I just wonder if all of us have the same bent as my son Trey does, just to flirt with the line just a little bit, right? How are we doing with this, church? Are we doing a good job at denying ourselves? If Jesus can humble himself, if he can consider his equality with God not something to grasp, if following him means doing that, well then how are we doing? How does this change things in the course of our life? Here's the first thing. I think it means that I have to get better at not getting my own way, which is super hard for me. If following Jesus means that I take on the nature of a servant, it means that others, you all, have to come before me. And that might cost me, right? Personally, like it might hurt a little bit. Actually, if it doesn't ever cost me, I'm not sure I'm denying myself. I don't think I'm doing good at that. I was thinking of this week, like how can we make a checklist to determine whether or not us as individuals, we are doing a good job at denying ourselves. And I thought of like things like kind of like my list that I made, but I think the real key is to go through all of your interactions in a day or a week or a month and ask yourself, did that cost me? Did I serve others at my own expense? I think that's how you do the checklist. There's lots of opportunities. Some of them are inside this building, in this room, on Sunday mornings. I hope a lot of the opportunities to deny ourselves take place outside this room, serving other people that aren't followers of Jesus. You know, it's interesting because what might really, really stretch me could be a walk in the park for you guys, right? I'll never forget a man, a good friend of mine, his name was Masi, and he was part of our church in Italy. Super godly guy. Oh my word. He put us all to shame about what a humble, simple follower of Jesus he was. He got, it was like leukemia, and he got put into the hospital in one of those isolation rooms. I know I've told you guys this story before, where the isolation room where the wind is always blowing out or what, you know, to keep the germs away, and So going to visit him was like this huge ordeal. You had to get all gussied up in this plastic stuff and masks. We wore masks before they were cool, right? Just all kinds of things. Nurse had to come and check you out and make sure that you were sterile enough or whatever. And then you get in the room and you just visit. You know, you just talk to your friend who has been in this same room for who knows how long. And I could do that all day. Like, for me, it was a pleasure. It was a joy to sit and visit with my friend. Sometimes we play, you know, we play cards. Sometimes we just sat in silence because it was a bad day. And he just needed somebody to be in the room with him. You know what I mean? My teammate that also went to visit him, he was a part of our church. And he told me one time, he said, man, it's hard for me to go visit him. All I can see is the tubes and the machines and he looks pale and it's hard to watch and I don't know what to say. But he went, just like I went. He made himself go and visit, even though it was a difficult situation. And I think about that a lot. For me, what was a joy, I mean, I guess it cost me something. I spent some time away from my family. I don't know, but it was nothing. I loved it. But for my friend, it was very costly. His serving of our church member cost him something. It was hard. So I think if we're going to deny ourselves, we have to keep doing more of those things that are hard, that are difficult to do. Second thing that I think that we need to do is we need to work on being others-focused. It means I look at you all before I look at myself. I need training in this area. I don't think any of us naturally do that. I feel like in life there's kind of stepping stones to realizing how selfish you can be. It was for me. Maybe I should just say this for me, right? Like, I felt like when I was a single, like, college student, I had, you know, I lived for myself. I didn't have any other person that I needed to serve on a regular basis, right? It was the Brian Rodert show. Well, then I got married. I met Heidi, and suddenly, that's not going to work anymore. It can't be the Brian Rodert show anymore. So I had to get rid of that part of me that was selfish, right, and focus on Heidi. Then I started having all these crazy kids of mine, right? And then we had to focus on our kids, right? We had to get rid of being Brian-focused and focus on them. It's like there are stepping stones in your life, but the cool thing is it doesn't just have to be that. Like, there are chances for us to join a small group here at church, and you're with other people week after week after week, and they start to see, you're kind of selfish in this area. And they can lovingly point that out to you. Lovingly, right? Not meanly, but lovingly point that out to you and help you to grow in that area. I'm so thankful for the church because we're not blindsided by these sins that we didn't even know existed in our lives. Denying ourselves is really hard, but we have a really good example in Jesus. He let all of that greatness go to become a normal man, a low man, not a rich man, not a powerful man, just a man. That man was eventually arrested. He was tried. He was convicted, even though he was 100% innocent, like literally 100% innocent. And his punishment was to be nailed to a cross until he was asphyxiated. That leads us to the last part of the verses. If anyone wants to follow me, deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. You guys know what take up his cross means? The modern day equivalent would be, if anyone wants to follow me, he must deny himself, get ready to go to the electric chair, and follow me. When you say take up your cross, it only means like, get ready to be executed. That's what being a follower of Jesus means. And this is probably where the disciples like gasped. What do you mean? Why would anyone crucify Jesus? All you've done is walk around and heal people and teach people. Well, how is that worthy of death, right? So it kind of makes you see where Peter's coming from in this passage. His comment must have just seemed to come right out of left field. Did he just say we have to take up our cross? Remember that passage from Philippians we just read? The very end, it said about Jesus, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. That even death on a cross is like a way of saying, even death, like it's the worst death imaginable. embarrassing, humiliating, painful, long. Jesus was that humble that he did that. Can you believe it? Only the worst of criminals would be killed that way. That's what he did. So if we want to follow Jesus, it means we have to be ready to die. I could probably read 100 stories about people who have been killed for their faith. It's part of our history as followers of Jesus. People write these things down to kind of inspire us to keep following Jesus. The church in Afghanistan right now is preparing to take up their cross. Following Jesus costs them something. It costs them a lot. And for those of us who have never experienced anything like that, I wonder if we're soft. If our faith is weak because it's never been tested in that way. Philippians says that all of these things that we see in Jesus, we're to put in practice with how we act with each other. Following Jesus means I deny myself in my relationship with you all, with my family members, with my neighbors, with everybody I come into contact with. It means that I give up my rights, and I mean every one of my rights, for the good of other people. Every time. It means that all of us are in a room, just like those cartoon characters that said, after you, no, after you. That should be us. We should be in a contest to give up our rights for the good of others in this room. Can you imagine what it would be like to be a part of a church, a community of other believers who do an excellent job of letting other people be more important than them? I cannot imagine how a community, a city would be changed because of a church that was really good at that. I work hard at making sure that your needs are met, and you do the same thing for me. I make sure what's good for you is what happens, and you do the same for me. I would want to be a part of that church. Would you all want to be a part of that church? I don't want to get to the end of my life, right? Stand before God and say, well, listen, God, I really wanted to deny myself. I did. I heard all the sermons. I read what Jesus said. But what I really wanted to do is put my toe over the big yellow line. I would have denied myself, but this is so much fun being on this side of the yellow line, right? Do you want to stand before God and tell him that? I couldn't follow you because me being on the throne was just so much more important. It was so much better. It was so much more fun. I have to think that the guy who created us, God, knows what's best for us, and he knows that this lifestyle of denying ourselves and taking up our cross is good for us. We should listen to him and do that, right? I want to be really careful because I don't want to make it sound like following Jesus is just one big miserable sacrifice your whole life. I mean, it kind of is, but it's worth it. It's worth it. The God of creation has mapped it out and said, this is good for you. If Brian is on the throne of his life, it's terrible. It's not good, right? If you all are on the throne of your lives all day, day after day after day until you die, your life is going to stink. It's a hard way to live. But if we get good at this and we're a part of a community of believers who are sacrificing ourselves for the good of other people, that's good for us. It helps us to be more like Jesus, and that's a really good thing. I want to finish in prayer this morning because I can't do any of this just on my own strength. I'm not strong enough to do that. I want us to just take a few minutes. I'm going to guide us in prayer, and then I'm going to be quiet, and you just talk to God. You ask him to help you in these different areas. Let's pray, church. Father, we come to you this morning knowing that we haven't always done great at this.
Father, I say that not to heap guilt on anyone. It's just the facts. We all need to grow in this area of being selfless. Father, just now, help us bring something to mind, an area in our life right now where we need to do a better job at this today. Right now, would you bring someone to mind who is not following you yet and who we need to serve well so that we have a chance to point them to Jesus? I thank you for your grace and your forgiveness. Father, I thank you that we can walk out of this room with our head up, not guilty because we don't measure up. Father, thankful that we have a chance every single day to repent, to do differently, to improve, to be a better follower of you. Thank you for being good, Father. Thank you for hearing our prayers and for going with us everywhere we go this week. I pray this in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen.